Well, another epic anthem is the indication that it's time for comedy. On WUWM at night, I'm Rachel Owens, and in the studio with me is Maverick, otherwise known as Matt Kempel. Hi, Mav.
Hi, Rachel.
So, that makes me Goose, or maybe Iceman. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Iceman today.
I think that's the better way to go, that because he definitely survives the movie.
Yeah, yeah. And he had really cool hair.
That's true, yes.
And you can be my wingman anytime.
Okay, good to know.
So, as the purveyor of fine comedy in the good land, you've known Ryan for some time, and you've seen him develop as a comedian, right?
Yeah, quite a few years. In fact, I've known Ryan since, you know, he was in diapers, which was just a couple of weeks ago, in fact.
And if you were emceeing an event right now, and Ryan Lowe was about to come on stage, what would you want people to know about him, and how would you just introduce him?
Oh, sure. I'd say something like, don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, the restrooms are right over there. And now, speaking of potty humor, here's Ryan Lowe.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Mav. We're really revved up now to meet Ryan, so we'll just bring him in. Oh, wait. But did we assign him a Top Gun character name?
He is known as the Lone Wolf of comedy, so maybe he could just be Lone Wolf.
I don't even want to be here right now.
Hey, great to have you in the studio. No, it's not.
No, not for me. It's great to be here. It's great to see you, both of you.
We have a nice little benefit of knowing each other for a little while now. So,
fact.
I know things that our listeners don't necessarily know. So one of those things is roughly how long you've been doing comedy, but why don't you let our listeners know?
I have been doing comedy roughly for 8 years, and I've been doing it well for one. Get it? That's comedy joke number one. Yeah, 8 years.
We're keeping a tally of how many.
December 2nd was my anniversary, if anyone's keeping track, yes.
Oh, nice.
It was outstanding. Well, it was a
Where did you do your first?
My first show was a graduation showcase from the Comedy College.
Oh, yeah.
It was fantastic because all our friends and family were there, and boy, were we hilarious.
To them.
To them. And to ourselves and to each other. And then we did a comedy contest in Minneapolis with one of the other students, and we drove up there and just got annihilated, rightfully so, because we sucked. And I kind of had to reevaluate how amazing we were at comedy. But it was good. It was a wake-up call.
That's interesting to have that realization of, wow, we're not any good at this, but we're going to keep doing it.
You might as well keep doing it. I don't think there's any other thing.
Well, there's certainly a learning curve. But with comedy, it feels like you can know you're really bad at it, but just still have the desire, just, you know, no, I have to keep
just
doing this.
Keep trucking through for some reason, for no reason. That's the thing. There's no reason. It's not like you're going to get anywhere anytime soon,
like
you
if,
know, but you just want to keep trying at it and you want to.
Because I can't imagine like a house painter, like the worst house painter that there is. You come out and he's like painted the lawn instead of, you know, your siding. Be like, okay, maybe this isn't the job for you. No, no, I have a real desire to keep this up. I'm going to keep it up.
That's how Jackson Pollock started. You know, it was the worst house painter ever. And they said, wait a minute. I'm like the Jackson Pollock of comedy, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Misunderstood and a recluse.
And dribbling.
And dribbling.
Constantly
that
dribbling.
That makes sense. Yeah. Well, one thing our listeners may not know about you is when you're performing stand-up, you kind of fall into this character. In a way, it's you, but it's not you.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain that or?
I can't. it's weird because I don't know. I don't do it on purpose. I mean, I do it on. That's who I am on stage, you know. And it's not me. It's just a very isolated and amplified part of me.
Sure,
I would say. So, like when I get excited, I start shouting like the guy on stage, you know. And to me, the guy on stage, it's for those of you who haven't seen me, which is probably most of you, it's a lot more growly and a lot more shouty and Gilbert Gottfried. Like, that's what I get a lot. Oh, Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, so is that something you went up and did comedy, just sort of realized that's something you fell into, or is it sort of like a safe zone?
It evolved, I think. It was never a conscious, hey, let me go up and shout. And be weird and then see if that's what'll work tonight. It just kind of evolved. Like same way your joke writing evolves, where, you know, I write a certain style of jokes and then those tend to do better than other styles of jokes. I will gravitate more toward that style. Mm-hmm. It's like a survival of the fittest.
Has that type of character changed a lot over the years?
When I first started, I wanted to be the cool guy. And I would get up there and, hey, here's some cool stuff about how cool I am.
Yeah, funny things that I've
here's
come
some
up
funny
with.
Stuff. And all right, girls, meet me in the back, you know. And I kind of started being more successful, doing shorter jokes and one-liners, a more deadpan. And so I gravitated toward being deadpan. My first year, I sounded like a guy doing a bad Mitch Hedberg impression because that's what I was doing, you know. And then the second year, I sounded like a guy doing a bad Stephen Wright impression, you know. And then it turned into this where I would try to see how quiet I could be on stage. And I would tell all my jokes like this, and I thought that was funny to me. You know, and it kind of was, but there's no energy there. There's zero energy. I liked the deadpan. The deadpan was working, so I kept that, but just cranked up the dial on the intensity. So it's like, I guess that's what I would say I do now is intense deadpan.
That's actually a really, I think, a really great way to describe it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to hear you talk about it that like and to think like, oh, okay, yeah, doing it really quietly and softly is too much. But you go to the opposite spectrum and you're Sam Kinison, you know, and it's like, well, that's really only funny because it's Sam Kinison and that was his signature. So it can't be that one extreme or another. It has to be your own somewhere in the middle that you find yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of your comedy evolving, getting into your jokes, a lot of them are one-liners or sort of like the setup punch style, which in this day and age, there's a lot of story-based comedy. So it's really exciting when you're performing to have that kind of a characterization and have those kinds of jokes come through. It's just a different kind of style. I think it sets you off from, you know, what other people are doing. Talking about the evolution of your character, you want to set up one of your jokes for us and talk about kind of how it's evolved a little bit?
If we do my trash can joke, here's one from years ago where it was – I was being quiet, and it's just awful, but it's the exact same joke the whole way through, except, like, the delivery, like in the first one, is just sleepy, I would say. I don't, well, here, take a listen.
I have this trash can I don't want anymore. I've been trying to throw it away for, like, 6 years. All I managed to do is piss off the garbage man.
I have this trash can I don't want anymore. I've been trying to throw it away for like 6 years. He likes trash can jokes.
I have this trash can I don't want anymore. I've been trying to throw it away for like 6 years.
And we're back. I've always wanted to do that. Well, it's a great example of how just emphasizing something a little bit differently or just saying it the same thing but in a different style kind of changes the way that that joke's perceived. And, you know, as we hear it, it gets a bigger laugh.
Yeah, if you listen to this next one, it's, again, the same joke. I'm sort of coming into my character. It's not quite there yet, but it gets a bigger laugh. Same joke. Bigger laugh. Why is that? I don't know. Take a listen.
The other day I saw a guy with a Confederate flag tattooed on the back of his neck. I thought to myself, you might want to consider growing a mullet. This is one situation where it would actually make you look like less of a redneck.
I saw a guy the other day with a Confederate flag tattooed on the back of his neck. And I thought to myself, you might want to consider growing a mullet. This would be one situation where it would actually make you look like less of a redneck.
I saw a guy the other day with a Confederate flag tattooed on the back of his neck, and I thought to myself, you might want to consider growing a mullet. Back there. You know, this would be one situation
where it would actually make you look like less of a redneck.
What inspires you as far as when you're writing a joke or you think of something that's kind of funny, what gets that to evolve into the joke?
Mathematical precision. For real. My degree is in physics.
Really?
Yeah, so I'm very left-brained that way. And so to me, and I need to get away from this, but I'll write a joke and it needs to be mathematically perfect. It's not a joke to me, it's an equation, you know, and, which is stupid and it's a horrible thing in a lot of ways. But
because you're limiting yourself?
Because I'm limiting myself. And so if I don't write something and think it's funny, then it's gone. And I've thrown out so much stuff that probably could have worked. But I like jokes that make sense, you know. And to me, if I can write a joke that makes sense, then the universe makes sense to me. I don't know. That's what a joke to me is like some balance.
The universe is a joke.
A balance point. It really is. It really is. And it's like the grand unified joke that's as close as I can get to making sense of the world that I live in, you know.
Is there certain material that you do that you find audiences react to in bigger ways than others? Or has an audience reacted to a joke in a certain way that made you change it?
Yeah, they don't laugh. That's a big indicator for change to me. Or I don't know. It depends on the audience. I won't really mess with a joke until I've tried it in front of like three different audiences. And then you have to be strategic, and it's hard to – you know, eyeball a group of people. And I've made that mistake before too, where I look out and it's older people or whatever. And I'm like, oh, I better do my conservative stuff. And that's not what they want. They want the fun stuff, you know. What was the question?
I said, how are you today? This is so awkward.
Let's go talking about myself.
You asked about validation, I think.
Yeah. Do you validate? Is that...
Well, that's interesting to think about as far as like what audience you're trying to talk to. Your joke about being Peruvian.
Yes.
I like that because the first example that you have, which is kind of difficult to hear, but you talk about being Russian, you set it up in a completely different way. It sort of works. There's certainly a funny concept there. But then you come back with that joke and just a few simple word changes and it completely changes the way that that joke is perceived.
Yeah, and the first one was the first time I ever had tried that joke. I know what I was going for concept-wise, but it wasn't quite coming together with the space station, and I tried to add too much about the baby, and I think, like, to me it made sense and it was funny, but I end up losing people because they have to think too hard about what the heck I was trying to say.
It's like the Stanley Kubrick of jokes.
Yeah.
You're like being really existential about it and, you know, like the universe and space stations.
And
you're like, what?
But the second version, well, let's listen to the first version.
I was born and raised on a Soviet space station. Which was difficult for me because I didn't speak very good Russian when I was a baby.
And we're back. Now the second version is pretty much like I rewrote the joke because it didn't work, and I don't rewrite stuff. I just throw it away, which is a horrible habit. But the second time I did it, it's more simplified and a little more cohesive, and it makes more sense. And it's the same idea, but something that everyone can get on board with.
I was born and raised in a Peruvian fishing village, and on my 16th birthday, I remember I said to my father, you know, you've been great, and I love you, and thank you for everything, but it's time for me to seek my fortune in America. And I remember he looked at me with his big brown eyes, and he said, no hablo inglés. Which sounded important.
I'm wondering, like, how much you need to change a joke over time due to pace doesn't work. Like, you need to just give audience more of a beat to kind of catch on to the premise, the setup. And how much of that is just the audience itself? How much of it is, like, you have to really react in the moment?
I think a lot of it, like, you really have to feel an audience out. And it's like, I guess when you're talking to someone, you know, you should sort of develop, when do I pause? You know, how long am I going to give you to, you know, and I can look and see the wheels turning. Oh, now she's got that. I'm going to go to the next thing. But with an audience, it's similar, but, you know, they don't all have one collective eye contact. You kind of just have to feel this energy, I guess. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, you can just...
Oh, God, they know I have no clue. They figured it out.
You got to feel them out and you got to practice. And it's the nice thing is that this conversation with you, I probably have once, maybe twice, you know. But with an audience, you do it over and over and over. Mm. And you've done this joke so many times, you start to feel, hopefully, you know, if you're growing, you're feeling where the rhythm needs to be. There was a comedian at it. Nothing.
I believe you're thinking of Gloria Estefan.
Yes.
The Rhythm Is Gonna Get You.
That's a horror movie. The Rhythm Is Going to Get You. Nothing? No?
Hello? Anybody, is this thing on?
Waiting for the follow-up.
What I'm trying to say is Gloria Estefan had a song called The Rhythm Is Gonna Get You.
Entire Miami sound machine puppet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that her?
Mm-hmm.
I just remember my parents had a Gloria Estefan Greatest Hits album that they played on repeat all the time, like on the weekends, along with like the Hollies and the Carpenters.
Like throughout your entire childhood?
Yeah. Just last week, in fact. I was like, Mom, seriously, I don't even live here anymore. Please just switch.
Can't escape it.
You have such a unique stage voice.
Yes.
And your jokes are very unique. So sometimes that can be difficult for people to relate to because you're coming up there with this persona. And so if you're telling jokes but they're just not landing the right way, you know, that can obviously be a rough situation to be in. But are there certain jokes you have that just land really well that, you know, it's funny in ways you didn't intend it to be funny?
Yeah, I'll get people laughing at a setup, especially with a lot of my stuff, because it's pretty absurd, you know. So if I say I was born and raised in a Peruvian fishing village, you know, that might get a laugh just because it's stupid. And
yeah, it's not Jersey or North Dakota.
And I don't necessarily go for that. And I'm getting away from it a little more now in my writing, but I used to write things where it was a weird premise to begin with, you know, and get a stupid laugh. But I don't really want to get a laugh at the...
It's almost, you don't want the cheap laugh. You want it to be funny because it's funny, not because you just say something in a specific way.
Right. And I used to get offended almost because they weren't laughing at the funny part to me. You know, I would write this perfect joke and then... Oh, you're not. No, that's not the stop laughing. Wait till I finish it, you know. And then I'm like, what's my job out there? It's to make people laugh and have a good time. So who cares? You know, if they're having fun, they're having fun. And I'm really trying to focus more on that, where I like to write jokes that are what I would consider well written, but I don't want to exclude people either. Like, I like to write jokes. This is my ideal joke, where I tell it and there's a little nothing and then uproarious laughter, you know, because I want you to – I feel it's more satisfying for an audience member if you have to work for it a little bit mentally, you know. It's like a little puzzle to me or whatever. And eventually that gets exhausting and you just want to have a good time. But there should be a little of that where you – oh, I solved a thing, and then you feel good. You did a Sudoku puzzle or figured out what the joke thing was, and then you laugh and have a great time. But can be exclusionary, or – I'll tell a joke and maybe it's about Roman numerals and so only the dorks in the back are laughing and that's it, you know. And so I don't know. I still want to do the joke because they can appreciate it, but now everybody else is just sitting there
twiddling their thumbs
and waiting politely.
Well, another interesting thing is you mentioned like your comedy is a little bit absurd. And one thing that comes to mind is you've used puppets on stage. You've used balloons. You've used all kinds of different props. You're not a prop comic, you know, like a Carrot Top or anything like that. But you have assistants sometimes to get a punchline across.
Yeah.
How does that concept come about? Or I'll bring up the Falcon joke.
Okay, you could, yeah.
I know the story behind that, but if you don't
mind. Do you? Because I don't remember. Go ahead.
Well, you had told me once that it happened by accident.
Yes.
So for our listeners out there, Ryan had a balloon, blew it up, and then squeezed the ends together to make it.
Hold on, wait. Because I start, I say, hey, who wants – do you guys like balloon animals?
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that, and then back to me?
Back
great
to you now.
And then, well, I don't know what you would call it, but the sound that comes out, it's like the rubber is whistling almost. I don't know how to just – yeah.
It's like that.
Yeah. And so that happens to you on stage by accident, and your response as a balloon animal is
No, because I can't make balloon animals. Here's what happened, if you don't mind.
Please. Now, it was – well, you were the one that told me the story, so obviously I
– Well, the it must have been lying to you or it doesn't matter, but it did jog the memory. I was doing – oh, it was like a gong show kind of thing, and I was supposed to be the ringer because the judges weren't gonging anyone, and it was more fun if people are getting gonged. So I'm like, I'll go up and – so every week I would go up and just do the most annoying thing I could think of. They weren't gonging me because they wanted to see where it was going. You know, and so one week I did a sock puppet who would make fun of people in the audience or what, you know, and it was horrible and offensive. I'm like, what is the most annoying thing I could think of to do on stage? And it was squeak a balloon into the microphone and they didn't gong me and that's all I really had. But I was like, well, I'm just going to take that then and use it. So I'll use props.
Well, and that's what's great is you don't need the prop to make jokes, but you use them when you have a joke for that prop.
Yeah, I don't want to limit myself to not using, like the whole grandpa, the puppet joke is, I come out on stage with the puppet and a friend of mine, he said when he saw that, he was like, oh God, a ventriloquist, which is exactly what I wanted because the puppet ends up blowing his head off. And then he just is dead on the stage for the rest of the act and I don't acknowledge it.
And what to me is so exciting about that joke, I've seen you do that joke 7 or 8 times easily. And it's so funny to me every time because the puppet is there initially and you don't make any reference to it.
Right.
You know, you're just this guy and it's sort of like, oh, I have to know. Why does he have that puppet? Why? And then that joke comes up. And it's amazing and very effective and very funny. And then to continue your set like it never happened.
And he's still just hanging side of his blood out of his head. And it's, what I like about that is that you build this expectation, whether it's what's the deal with the puppet or, oh, God, a puppet. And, you know, why get to it right away? Let them think about it for a while. They don't listen to anything you say before that. But, you know, you build this expectation and then there's some payoff, which ends up being the unfortunate demise. But that's, you know, that's comedy. That's an expectation and then a letdown.
Just like life.
Just like life.
One last thing I just wanted to talk about is you just have such a unique approach to comedy. That's what's so fun about it. And I think it would be very difficult to steal your jokes because of the way that you deliver them is so unique. So somebody could tell one of your jokes and it might be funny, but it's not as funny as when you tell it. You started doing something. I don't know when you started it, but I saw it where you did improv on Facebook in a Facebook conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, because I want it to pick up because it's fun. It's it's just on my Facebook, Lone Wolf Comedy on Facebook. It's called Improv with Friends. It's an improv scene. So it's, oh, today, oh, what is it? We're in a police station, you know, go. And then the first one to come in and grab a character does. And then you play out a scene in the comments.
All typed out.
All typed out, yeah. And then, boom, now you have a done scene. And just for the purpose of doing it. But it's fun and it gives you something to look forward to. And
well, and one thing I get a kick out of is doing that sort of thing on purpose because, like you know, a lot of things that you and I would say or our friends say on Facebook is immediately
what's the
taken over by crazy comments because all of our friends are comedians.
Yeah.
And it ends up being an improv scene anyway.
Yeah.
Somebody will say something, oh, you kind of look like a hobbit. And then somebody will post a meme of the hobbit, you know.
Yeah, and they're all elbowing each other to get first and do the stupid line.
I like that you've kind of created, okay, you know what, let's actually do this. Let's do it for realsies and let's see where it goes.
It's fun and it's good practice and it's you can throw your little comment in and leave the scene whenever you're done and
log out.
Yeah. I think it's fun. I think it's a good idea. That's where most of my comedy comes from, to be honest. They say write about your life or what you know, and I have no life at all, so it's all like I have to make it up.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
Was how do you do this with no life?
I make it up.
Okay,
it's all a farce. But same with improv with friends. I don't know why we're talking about this. It's just a stupid idea I had the other day.
It was funny,
but it's funny.
That's why I brought it up.
I think it's fun.
I happen to really like that idea because I did notice. I'm like, these are some strange comments.
Well, because it was a police station. I don't know which one you read, but the last one
I
that
saw
was the one.
Station,
yeah, the police
station,
yeah.
Station, and it just got really weird. So yeah, I don't know if people read it and they're like, "What is happening?"
The best is Sig who likes certain comments. And then the cougar came in. Mom likes this.
Mom
what?
Mom likes cougars, Mom? Yeah.
Text that I'll send, especially with friends and family, it often comes down to that. It turns into a strange ongoing improv conversation. And it's just like, how did we start off here?
So, yeah, what happened? Yeah, that's how most of my conversations – I haven't had a genuine conversation in years, you know, and so why not
We talk all the time.
Yes. No, just with you. I mean, it's stuff we do anyway, I think, where we're making jokes. But at least this, you get time to think about it. It's like the George Costanza thing, you know, where it takes him 2 days to think of a comeback. But you can go sit and think what the cool thing to say is and then throw it in the – the jerk store called or whatever.
The jerk store called. Oh, that's right. That's what Costanza says.
I don't know. Why are you asking me these questions?
I asked you, where is my mother and why won't you give her back? So if we could just stay on point.
The rhythm is going to get you.
I actually love that concept as a horror movie. I gotta play with that.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, Ryan.
Thanks
for
having me.
I appreciate having you on the air.
Oh, I like being on the air. Thank you, everybody. Big shout out to Matt Kemple. Is John Starker.
Here's that check, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Well, Mav, I think that was pretty awesome. And, well, frankly, now that Ryan's out of the room, we can speak candidly, right?
Yeah. Ooh, finally. I honestly didn't think he was going to talk so much about himself. I was kind of hoping he would talk more about me, but...
I know, right? You say an interview is going to be about you, and they just let it go to their heads, right? So... Yeah. But seriously, though, I did like his improv with friends idea, and I hope it catches on because I think it's awesome. Do you need to be a friend of his for that to work, do you think? Or
Ryan's a pretty nice guy. I think he'd be friends with pretty much anybody.
So, all right.
Yeah, you can jump on the old Facebook and check that out.
Cool. So stalkers may be welcome. All right. Well, it's time to wrap it up. And in the spirit of a horror movie that I truly hope to see made one day, this is... Well, you know what it is. You're listening to WUWM at Night on Milwaukee Public Radio. And thanks as always, Matt, that's your real name, for coming in.
Thank you, Rachel.